Keith E. from the Sunday Survivors Group from the Laurel Mountain Highlands area.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was asked to do this by the programming chair, and I was like, shit, that's the one meeting I avoided at every retreat since I've been coming around. But I was talking with my sponsor about it. He said that's probably a good thing. So I guess I'm here to talk about intimacy and relationships. And early on, intimacy to me meant sex. Relationships meant, what are you doing for me? And that was, it wasn't any more complicated than that, and it was really that simple. So I'm gonna start with, I guess, what kind of brought me here this time. And it is related to relationships. It wasn't a healthy one. I was actually in prison. I was back on a parole violation. I had been around before that. I put together 11 months. Relapsed, and then within 2 months, I was back on a parole violation. So I live in Cambridge County with Johnstown, and sitting at my house, and there was a knock on the door, and it was the sheriff. I had a family member that's involved in law enforcement and the parole board, so I guess you could say as a courtesy, he came along and came into the house first before the sheriff and kind of said, stand up, empty your pockets. We're going to let these guys in here, and they have a warrant for your arrest, essentially. What had happened, I was mandated to do some parole stuff, drug and alcohol assessment, which I did. They recommended IOP, which I went to. But I seemed to not understand that being in there for my addiction issues, I wasn't able to have prescription painkillers. And I couldn't understand why my parole officer in Virginia didn't see things the way I did. I now know now from being in the field I was in that even though I peed dirty, but it should have been clean, the lady there is not even capable of telling my PO what I peed dirty for. And we were just, it dawned on me the other day that that little distinction in the law probably saved my life. So anyway, they came and got me, and they took me to Cambria County. And I didn't have any charges here in Cambria County. I was waiting extradition back to Virginia. And, you know, I remember when they were putting me in handcuffs, my mother was coming home right then. I have seen a lot of looks on my mother's face, you know. Disappointment, disgust, you know, joy. Like, I've seen the range of emotions with her and her looks. This look was different than any other look I had ever seen in my life. It was like, you know, that you see the Vietnam vets with that stare. And that's what that look was. I kind of knew, I felt it at that time that, I guess I should preface this by saying my family were huge enablers through my whole addiction for 20 years. And I saw the look in her face and in her eyes, and I knew that she had finally reached the point where she was done, right? Now, my father wasn't home that day. He was at work, and he worked in law enforcement, too. He actually was a lieutenant at a state prison, which probably lends a little information as to why he was such an enabler. He worked in that field for 27 years. He didn't want his son exposed to that. I know now today I'm a big believer in consequences, and I don't regret anything that happened, but I do think sometimes that if I would have been allowed to feel some of those consequences early on, that things may have been a little different for me. I love my story. I love my path. I came. I want to change it today, but I do often think about that. Because early on, when I was a teenager and a young 20-something, I got in a lot of trouble charges-wise, but there was never any follow-through in those convictions. And because my family jumped in, paid for lawyers, being the type of work my family was in, they knew judges, they knew lawyers, so that it was always manipulated in a way where maybe Keith will learn his lesson this time. Yeah, you got caught with two bundles of dope, but we won't put you in jail. We'll just give you disorderly conduct, and maybe you'll learn next time. I know today that isn't usually the case for myself and most of us. I'm not trying to speak for anybody else, but that's the reality of it. So anyway, they take me to Cambria County. I'm sitting in there, and, you know, of course, I'm like, it's the counselor's fault for my OP. It's the judge's fault. Screw everybody. Still unable to see my part in these relationships I have and the unhealthiness of it. I had an inability to internalize anything. And a quick intimacy piece on that, at that time, it meant something that the word doesn't mean. It was sex. So when I heard that, I mean, I didn't know how to be intimate in the true definition of it with anybody. So I'm sitting in Cambria County waiting for extradition. They have 30 days to come get me. And it was around like 25 days maybe that I finally called home and spoke with my father. And that conversation didn't go very well because he was to a point where he was dumb too. He said, I'm not sending you money. I'm not coming to visit you. You can't come here when you get out. You can't drive my cars. Nothing. He's like, if you call home, we'll talk to you. But I'm not doing anything for you anymore. I think he had finally reached the point where he realized. Now, other members of my family were on board long before they were. My sister works in this field. Well, not this field, but mental health, like psychology and stuff. She's a school psychologist. So she had been telling them for years, look, you got to stop. And sitting here today with a baby on the way in less than 3 weeks, I would love to think that I want to do this to my kid and enable them, but it has to be the hardest thing in the world to do that. And I get that today. So anyway, my father said that he was no longer going to love me to death, essentially, is what he said, to sum it up. Me being me, you don't understand, it's not my fault, I had a prescription for that piss test, I need you to get that and send it to Virginia so they don't have to come get me and write a letter to the judge. And he said, no, you need to own up to what you did. Basically, I mean, this is a unity retreat in spiritual weakness, so I won't say exactly what I said to him. The last words I said were, I can't believe you're doing this to your son. I never want to speak to you again. Hung up the phone. They came and got me like 2 days after that. And took me to Virginia. I get through the intake process. They do all that stuff. And I'm not calling home. Forget everybody. They're doing this to me, blah, blah. Still very unable to see my part in any of this stuff. And that's because I didn't know how to. I refused to. I probably knew how to. I wasn't capable of doing it at that time. I think it was like 4 or 5 days. Then this was like, would have been June 23rd. 4th or 25th, I finally, like, talked myself into calling home. I didn't have any money on my books. I had no underwear. I had no socks. Any of you who've been in prison, underwear, socks, and t-shirts are like gold. So I was being me. I can manipulate them into doing something, you know. Give them a sob story. It's always worked before. So I start calling on, like, the 24th of June. 2011, and nobody answers. I'm getting heated, man. And I kind of understand that they're probably serious this time, but I'm still stuck in that me, and I'm like, oh, they're not answering because it's me, and they won't give me any money and all this good stuff. Must have called 8 times that day. I woke up the next day. I probably called 15 times that day. No answer. That would have been June 26th. The third day I called, and they didn't answer the first couple times. I called in the afternoon, and my brother finally answered the phone. And I knew something was wrong when he answered that phone, because it was a track phone with a D.C. area code from when I was in there for my long sentence. When they would come down and visit, they bought that phone so it could be cheaper for me to call. There's no reason he should have had that phone. He's never answered it the whole other 13 and a half months that I served. So I was kind of like, immediately, what the fuck are you guys doing? Why aren't you answering my calls? And he was like, hey, that's to tell you something. Your dad had a stroke. That was a rough day. And he said, we're just keeping him alive so you can say goodbye. So my last thought, you know, my whole thought was like that last conversation. And that sticks with me to this day, man, because at that point in time when my brother told me, and he said, oh, by the way, your great aunt died 2 days before that, and your sister's getting a divorce. So here I am, sitting there for those 3 days, calling home, thinking it's all about me. It had nothing to fucking do with me. plain and simple. And at that very moment, and looking back on this, I realize this more and more every day in this process, that end, that bitter end, whatever you want to call it, had nothing to do with drugs. My spirit was broken. I could no longer lie to myself about this thing. I could no longer blame anybody else. And I remember saying to myself that day that starting today, I'm going to do whatever I need to stay clean. I knew about this program. I see it work in people's lives. I've seen others build healthy relationships and keep them. I've seen people get their kids back and build healthy relationships with them. I've seen people build healthy relationships with people outside of this program, which kind of is still a foreign concept to me. I'm working on that, but I'm learning here how to do that. Anyway, long story short, I get out. I actually get a weekend furlough to go to the funeral. Because immediately I'm thinking, damn, I'm going to have to go escorted by marshals to my father's funeral in shackles while there's an honor guard from the state prison there burying my father. And this was my first, I mean, God had been around long before this for me, and I realize that now, but my first glimpse of that was when I was standing in front of that judge with my lawyer, brand new judge in the county too, just started that year, asking for a furlough. Unsupervised, to another state, no connection to Virginia whatsoever. I got arrested at a Grateful Dead concert. His mother passed away 2 weeks before my father. And he said, don't make me regret this. So I was able to be there for that. Got out, went to the funeral, came back, and now I'm standing in front of him for sentencing. Three and a half years over my head. Actually 5, because they could have given me the whole thing back. He said time served. 4 months. Not time served. I had like 2 weeks to go. Another glimpse of God in my life. So I got, actually another cool part. This has really nothing to do with it, but I'm sitting on the pod, counting the days down. I think I had like 10 days to go. And the warden called the pod and called me up and, hey, we miscalculated your date. You're getting out tonight at midnight. Awesome. you know. Family came and picked me up, and I came back and I dove right into this fellowship. I had had a home group already. At some point in time over my 10 years in this process, I had dibbled and dabbled in all of the suggestions, but just not all at once. This time I knew that I had to be different because I had done everything before and I had had sponsors, but I didn't really use them. I would work steps myself or the ones I wanted to, or I would tell my sponsor, yeah, I did that. Not knowing I'm only hurting myself. Once again, not capable of having that intimate relationship with a man. I probably wasn't even able to say the word intimate relationship with a man until recently. Because I giggle. You know what I mean? That's gay. But really, that is gay because it makes me really happy today. You know, and I understand the definitions of these words today because I guess I'll talk a little bit about my sponsor. My sponsor and the group of guys I knew before from area service when I had had that 11 months, and they really fucking annoyed me. You know what I mean? Everyone at area service annoyed me. Everyone that was happy, joyous, and free annoyed me. But I know today that that was only because I wasn't capable of pursuing healthy and intimate relationships. If I let you in, I was getting something out of it. And I wasn't really letting you in. I was giving you just enough. So you thought I was letting you in. I worked in sales for a lot of years and was very successful at it. I have an innate ability to manipulate. And up until I came in here, that was in an unhealthy way. Today, I know how, and manipulation probably isn't the right word to do it, but I guess would be to lead by example and serve this fellowship in a good way. And my first understanding of an intimate and healthy relationship happened in these rooms with my sponsor. The thing, the catalyst that kind of sparked my sponsorship, I'm a lifelong golfer, played in high school, played in college. I have a degree in pro golf management. You laugh now. It was the worst $30,000 I've ever spent. I work in mental health now, so go figure that one out. But we were at a meeting in Indiana, and all those annoying people are standing around, and I hear them talking about golf. All of a sudden, they weren't so annoying. Because here I was, everyone I used to play golf with smokes weed, drinks, they, you know, that's what they do. So I had no one to play golf with. They asked me if I wanted to go. I said, sure. And that conversation that day in that golf cart kind of just, I knew. You know what I mean? I knew. I asked him to be my sponsor, and I started building a relationship based on nothing other than a common purpose, really, I guess would be the way to put that. Because before, it was like, what are you doing for me? Or what can I do for you? And I guess, in a sense, this program's kind of like that, but not in that based in manipulation way. It's kind of like, okay, you've been around a while, I'm giving you this so I can save them. So that was my first understanding of a healthy, intimate relationship. And I shared some things with my sponsor that I never thought I would share with another human being. I was taking that shit to the grave, plain and simple. So that's the key. That happens a lot. Now, mind you, I'm building this healthy relationship. Got like 6 or 9 months clean, and like I'm ready for a sexual relationship. And I kind of probably got that confused a little bit because I wasn't ready. I don't think she was ready. But we did it anyway. We were going to be different. We're the, you know, yeah, terminally. standing here today, we're still together. But it was funny because we were sitting up on the deck earlier and talking about a couple they were a couple, and then they weren't a couple, and then they were a couple, and then they weren't. That's my story. That was a lot of trial and error, you know what I mean? We both went through growing pains. And we were both like, are we doing the right thing, or are we not doing the right thing? And when I thought we were doing the right thing, she thought we weren't. So it was like, and vice versa. And that happened a long time, and finally, when that whole thing seemed to have resolved itself, I let go of it. I took myself out of it. Because all my relationships for all those years, I was holding on to with white knuckles and manipulating and making people do what I want, and your point of view has to be mine, you have to think what I want, you got to go where I go. And I learned that through sponsorship. My sponsor let me be me in my process. When I called him or other guys in my sponsorship family or other guys that I built this relationship with in this program, it was never a bitch fest or a you need to. It was like, this is what I did. And I'm sure they saw this shit coming a mile away. But they loved me. They were intimate with me back. It wasn't fake. It wasn't... Look, my using friends, all that shit was... They weren't friends. That was fake. I hated the people I used with. But they were a means to an end. Today, I love the relationships I've built in this program with the men because that's where I kind of learned how to have healthy relationships with people outside of the program, with my now fiance. The biggest thing for me is communication, which I never did before. I thought I would communicate, I thought I would... But it was always fucked up. So, what I want to say is I'm grateful for those men. A little story about the, when her and I actually had our parting for, what was it, 4 or 5 months, we decided to go opposite directions, live in separate places, and reevaluate the situation. That came out really easy. When it was going on, it wasn't that solid in my head. But here I am calling my sponsorship family, and it was, like I said, it wasn't do this, do that, do this, do that. My grand sponsor, I'll never forget this, he said to me, real simple, and it really hit home, what are you going to do to stay clean? Because he knows my patterns. When I got out of jail from that long sentence, I immediately had to make amends with my ex from high school. That was the first one I had to make. And I did, and it went fucking sour quickly. And I got high over it. Look, I'm grateful for those men. I know I've said that 100 times. And through this process, I meet other men from other areas. And I get their numbers, and I talk to them, and I see them in events like this, and a guy that I'm building a relationship with now is here, and he's a father with daughters. I got a daughter on the way. That scares the shit out of me. And just a simple word from him, you'll be okay, dude. You'll know what to do. It's going to be the best moment of your life. Because I'm freaking out. I'm not going to lie. I'm having dreams I'm passing out in the delivery room. You know, my mom's having dreams that bombs are going off in the hospital while we're there. I'm breaking $1 million medical equipment. Fall. I'm a big dude. If I take out a table, I'm getting the bill for that. And we've had that conversation. And he comes up to me last night and says, dude, you're going to be okay. And I know that today. And I know that when the times get tough, because early on I built those relationships when the times were good and I called even when the times were good and I was there for other people, I allowed people to be intimate with me and I was intimate with others. It's second nature now when the times get bad. I know where to go. I know the solution to the problem. Whether I want to see it or not isn't always the case, but I have men around me that make me see it. Or at least try. You know, they're not there to say, oh, everything's great and fine and dandy. No. What the fuck are you going to do? Plain and simple. I want to thank the committee for letting me speak. I think I'm pretty close to being done. So that's all I got, guys. Thank you.